Hello, and welcome back to the Profiling Podcast Series, introducing you to the members of the International Water Association's Digital Water Program Steering Committee. For those of you joining us for the first time today, the IWA Digital Water Program is on a mission to provide a platform for water utilities to explore and share experiences on their digital water journey. The program has provided roadmaps and guidance that will help water utilities in making the transition to the next generation of smart water systems and fulfill the need for improved resiliency to secure and sustainably manage water resources now and in the future. The Steering Committee conceptualizes and produces these and other outputs of the program, including white papers, books, webinars, and podcast series like this. I am Erin Jordan, Strategic Programs Officer at the IWA, coordinating the Digital Water Program. My guest today is Sheila De Carvalho, Managing Director at the Hydroinformatics Institute in Singapore. Sheila has been a member of the Digital Water Program Steering Committee since 2022 and represents the Resilience Subcommittee. Welcome to the podcast, Sheila.
Thank you for having me on the podcast, Erin. It is a pleasure to be here. Well, to share a bit more about myself, but more so, I'm also happy that I will get to know my colleagues better.
So, Sheila, let's start from the beginning. Who are you? Tell the listeners, who is Sheila?
Well, maybe from the very beginning, I was born in Mozambique, Maputo, where I spent my earlier years. I'm the youngest of three children, and I come from a family who seems to be absolutely enamored with the engineering profession. My brother and father are both engineers. I moved when I was quite young, so in my early teens, I moved to South Africa to study, and I ended up, fast forward a few years, I ended up pursuing a degree in civil engineering at the University of Cape Town. So definitely influenced by the many engineering voices in my background telling me this was a great path to follow if I wanted to have a tangible impact on our environment and the communities that live in it. So I then followed that with a master's degree in the same department, but focusing a lot more on water resource management. I've worked for several engineering consultancy firms in many places around the world, primarily based out of Africa for the last 17 years. And now I find myself working and enjoying Singapore, still in the water sector and still very passionate about it. And I'm married and we have two kids. I'm married to an engineer, I might add. So that's me in a short summary.
It seems that engineering follows you around wherever you go. But I want to ask, so as you said, your family is very much into engineering and you also became a civil engineer. But when did you discover your passion for water?
Well, you could almost say engineering is in my DNA. That's probably a very poor engineering joke, but I think my awareness of water and its role in people's lives came at a very young age. And coming from a background where the impacts of water and, or rather the lack thereof, were and are still very visible on a day-to-day basis, I always felt that something could be done to change that, so the lack of good quality water and related services. Of course, I didn't understand it as such, but from then on, it ignited sort of an interest. But it wasn't until much later, during my early university days, that I realized I could do something to contribute towards that challenge, and that I was getting the tools to enable me to do so. So this drive started a while back, but it took time to grow and mature, and it's still growing and maturing. If you think about it, despite the great progress that's been made, billions of people still lack access to safe drinking water, sanitation, to proper hygiene and good quality of life. I think the World Health Organization estimates over 800,000 people in low and middle income countries die as a result of inadequate water, sanitation, hygiene, etc. each year. So I personally feel, it's really at the core of who I am and what I do, I personally feel that providing people, and this big term universal coverage, but providing each and every human being with adequate water, however we define that, is the responsibility of each and every one of us. It's not just the government, it's not key stakeholders. Each and every one of us have a role to play, and that's really, I think, at the core of my passion for staying in the sector, and in particular, I think also working in places where the need is very, very big.
Thanks for that, Sheila. I think when you sit and probably just ask a few water professionals, and I think mostly water professionals from low and middle income countries, you ask them what their passion is, I believe that they will all give the same type of response that you just gave. And most of our passion is born out of the experiences that we have in our home countries. I'm from Barbados, and before I was born, I think even before my parents were born, Barbados was labeled and categorized as a water scarce country. And in that, growing up and learning all the jingles you hear on the radio, it really our government really tried to impress upon us as citizens, like, please save water. And I think that is where my passion for water came from as well. So yeah, I definitely think a lot of us have a deeper, and I think a more personal connection to water than we actually realize. So another question, the water sector is huge, and there are many different sections that you can be interested in. But for you, I want to ask you, when did you realize that you wanted to dabble, I should say, maybe lack of a better word, but dabble in digital water, in the digital transformation of the water sector? When did you realize that, you know, maybe let me focus on digital?
Well, I can't say that there was one definitive point in time. I think it's been a gradual process. And similar to my sort of passion for the water sector, it was an initial awareness of what the need is, and therefore what the role of digitalization can play in addressing that need, and particularly here in the water sector. But as I learn and I see and I'm exposed to more, it's gradually being reinforced that one, this can really play a big role in ensuring what I mentioned earlier, that people have access to these basic services, that we do it in a better way, that we do it in a more sustainable, long-lasting future, sort of looking after our next generation's way. So that's become sort of stronger, and therefore I believe I'm definitely in the right place, both in the sector, but at this crossroads of this interface of digital innovation, discovery in a sense, and the basic requirements of human societies. So Erin, I can't say that there was a particular moment, but of course now, also having moved to Singapore, I can see in practice a lot of the things sort of fast forward, what it looks like when it is done. So I could say that now I definitely am a lot more, that drive is confirmed and committed in a sense.
And as you mentioned, Singapore, you're I don't know if I should say that you're starting anymore. You've been there for a bit. Tell us a bit about your move to Singapore and the Hydroinformatics Institute, where you are the managing director. What does your role entail?
Yeah, well, not starting anymore, although I often say I'm a newbie here. It's almost going on 8 months. But yes, I think I mentioned earlier that I've worked for several consultancies or consulting companies before. These have merged and have grown and shrunk and have acquired others. And so I've had an opportunity to work in many other places. In the last 10 years or so, I've been working with a global consultancy firm called Royal Asconing DHV. and they are a shareholder in the Hydroinformatics Institute, or short for it is H2I. So that's how I find myself here, bringing the best of both, the experience of these 140 years of Wallace Gonding DHV, and this fantastic, vibey, innovative, energetic, creative company that is H2I. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm currently managing the Hydroinformatics Institute, but maybe telling you a little bit more about H2I. It has its origins in the Singapore Delft Water Alliance. So therefore it has a very strong basis, foundation in research, particularly focusing in the urban and coastal water resource management side. But today, some quite years down the line, 9 years down the line, H2I still brings the best of academia and research, research and development to real-world problems and applications through the many projects, consultancy mainly projects, but also some collaboration in other initiatives. And really, H2I focuses on using data analytics, machine learning, advanced computer modeling to find and bring innovative ways to leverage that the big data and state-of-the-art computing and domain knowledge to provide improved solutions, improved inland and water, inland, sorry, and coastal water management, primarily in Singapore, but also in the region. And of course, we would really love to see that go beyond just the region. So we work on consultancy projects in the fields of monitoring, hydrodynamic modeling, water quality modeling. We also work on operational management systems. And I think H2I has done some really interesting and amazing things since its inception into 2014. It's been applying insights and developing new ideas and technologies in Singapore, as I said, but these could really benefit other parts of Asia, APAC, the world. So in my role, and together with this collaboration with Royal Scoring DHV, I really aim to help H2I take some of these solutions, some of these innovations to a bigger audience. So bringing my experience in managing complex and sort of big projects in teams in many parts of the world, my background also in the water sector, and my passion for both the sector and innovation and digitalization, bringing that together with Royal Scoring's extensive network expertise, I really aim to help drive H2I further in terms of its innovation, in terms of quality and standardization at the level of some of these global companies. So that's a bit about H2I. That's a bit about my role and where I see we are going.
It would be good to feature some work from H2A on our IWA website. So, from the beginning, you've said that you've moved from Mozambique to South Africa, and you've also experienced working in different geographical contexts. How would you describe the differences in their approach to digital water specifically?
So it's a very good question because it's something I ask myself, what am I seeing? What am I picking? What's different? But just on your previous sort of encouragement to share a bit more around H2I, absolutely, I'd love to do that. There are a lot of very interesting things we've worked on and are working on that I think the broader audience would be interested in. So definitely we'll do that. But of course, I also welcome everyone listening to go to the H2I page, and I'll, I think, share a little bit more later. But what have I seen? What are the differences? Well, I think broadly speaking, I don't believe anyone today questions the benefits, hence the need to bring in innovation, digital tools and technologies. We don't question the going this way, the digital water sector. At least I don't feel so every time I speak to different people in the industry, but outside as well. And that's irrespective of the geographies. So wherever we are, I think we acknowledge the benefits, broadly speaking. However, I still seen and experienced massive differences in the understanding of some of those benefits and how to go about it, and therefore in the rate of adoption of digitalization in our sector. By nature, it's a very traditional and conservative industry, the water sector. I mean, I like to say we can't afford to fail because people's lives depend on it. Well, they literally do depend on this precious resource. Therefore, sometimes the adoption of new and untested technologies, approaches, hasn't been as quick. Well, the adoption has been sluggish, in my opinion. This is, of course, further compounded by social, economic, political, environmental differences across the globe. You know, what might be critical in one place, in one setting, might be a nice to have in another. For example, improving efficiencies, increasing visibility and transparency, long-term goals on sustainability might not be top of the agenda, because provision of basic services to people that literally don't have water and sanitation at the basic level, in a landscape or with a backdrop of very limited resources, financial and human capacity more, is really the focus. So I can understand these differences, these geographical differences. And of course, that also extends beyond just talking around the key stakeholder, the public sector, but to also the role of private sector and academia, two very critical role players in helping drive innovation. So how involved, encouraged are they? How on top of this sort of drive towards digitalizing the water sector are they? Because they can play a pivotal role. Having said all of that, I am quite heartened to see in some places like Singapore, and in some organizations like the IWA and in our Steerco, that this topic is not only top of mind, and it's beyond just what we preach, it's also what we actively do. We can see it in tangible ways, in projects, in innovations being developed, in R&D work, in publications, in workshops, and lessons being shared and learned, and new developments going on, and prioritization of funding, but then tangibly also seeing it in actual infrastructure and in actual management of this precious resource. So for me, it's a matter of time. Yes, we do take some time, but what I really believe is that we should leverage, leapfrog in a sense, from those that are further ahead, from their experiences, their learnings, their resources as well, to be able to pull along, entice in a sense, show that value add, that need to those who are more reluctant to adopt or unable or limited to adopt this concept of digital water. So yes, differences, but I am encouraged to see the progress, and I think we are sort of helping each other in a way across these geographies. And it's of course a global topic. So that also helps, because it is in the boardrooms and in the agendas of large organizations that influence the directions in many places where it perhaps is still behind.
I can actually identify with so many points that you just raised, from the priorities of different countries, because obviously not everybody is focused on digital transformation. Everybody's first trying to make sure that their citizens have water and basic sanitation. And then the barrier of science and the private sector, the academia and the private sector working together to bring the knowledge forward. And then there's also the issue of lawmakers and the legislators accepting that science. There's a lot that we can talk about when it comes to why people approach digital water differently, and probably why, as you said, there are some who are reluctant. But I wanted to ask you, given all of these things that you've seen, what is one aspect, if there is one that you can pinpoint right now, but what is one aspect of digitalization that you think is being overlooked, that if it is considered, do you think it would enhance the rate of change in the water sector?
Yes, absolutely. I think, although I said earlier that sort of broadly speaking, everyone understands, and not just in our sector, but across in many other sectors, we understand the benefits and the need for digitalization and for innovation and all of that. And actually, when presented with some of these tools and technologies, these approaches, these new novel ideas, I really struggle to think of anyone that is not sort of blown away and wants to know more and thinks it's would be fantastic only if. So it really is an exciting theme, but I think where we really need to focus is understanding the why much more closely. So this is all digitalizing, etc., is a means to something. It's a means to an end. And so we need to understand what that end is. What do we want when we embark on this journey of digitalization and changing and innovating? What are the major differences that this can make in the lives of people? And not just the top level, broad strokes type sort of everyone knows 1, 2, 3. I mean, it improves efficiency and it helps with better management. Not at that level, but at specific understanding the needs of the countries, the cities, the citizens, the people, the various stakeholders and their goals. How is this going to help with the ultimate goal and what they have to do and deliver? And at the end of the day, why I still remain in the sector, how is this going to help bring water, sanitation, etc.? How is this going to help improve people's lives? I think we should spend a lot more time on getting that clear upfront, and the planning and the adoption will follow. Of course, cognizant of the resources that each different place entity has. But that to me would be the focus, translating that why to a specific need, problem, challenges, etc., of the people we're trying to convince or help or digitalize.
You raise a very good point with the why. I think sometimes we get a bit lost thinking that, you know, we are doing something positive, and then at the end we do all this work and it's probably not useful. It's probably not tangible. And that might be because we forget why we are doing things and who these things are for. That's very true. Very, very, very true. So, we've spoken about a lot of serious stuff. And in every episode, I ask the interviewees, so all of the steering committee members, I ask them what they do to relax. So, Sheila, you are no different. I will ask you the same thing. When you are not working, and I know for you, you're very busy, so sometimes it might not be that much time you get for yourself, but when you're not working, what do you do? Like, how do you spend your downtime?
Erin, wasn't everything we just talked about super fun? I thought that's the whole downtime, but now, okay, again, poor engineering jokes aside. it is, though. It's really sort of the stuff that drives me to work in every day. So not to say that I enjoy that part too. But I am a very sociable person, and so you can easily find me sharing a good meal, starts right there, with friends and family, heatedly discussing. I love debating, talking, and sort of just sharing and bouncing back of ideas, this back and forth. So you'll find me talking along on some of these topics that we've spoken about, but many others that I'm passionate about. And if I can do that in different parts of the world, meeting different people and experiencing different cultures, that for me is first prize. The sort of richness of history and landscape and food and culture is really the stuff that drives me. I love running as well. I do it every day, but I love running in different cities. There's a theme there, traveling. and experiencing all these different things. So that's when I'm really happiest. So my faith, my family, history and culture are really at the heart of the things that bring me joy and I'm passionate about. Yeah, really enjoy that.
Yeah, you sound like a real global citizen. I don't think that anybody could pinpoint you to any particular country. I feel like you could settle and just assimilate anywhere. And I think that's really good, especially in this day and age.
Erin, if there are people and they have something to share, that's definitely my vibe.
Listen, I get it. So final 60 seconds of the podcast. Tell everybody where they can connect with you, Sheila, and what you are cooking up for the rest of 2023.
So we can definitely connect on LinkedIn, and it would be great to be able to also engage there on some of the topics we discussed. But of course, as I said earlier, I really enjoy this sort of sharing and engaging and debating on ideas. So I'd also love to engage some of the listeners, some of my colleagues, my peers, etc., on a one-to-one. So you're welcome to also then reach out and we see how we can follow that up. Learn from you would be fantastic. Hear your stories, your rich water history. So yes, mainly that. For the rest of the year, as I mentioned, my focus is really on helping H2I, working with the amazing people that are here to take it to a broader audience, a larger scale. So that's what I'll be working on in the next couple of months. Of course, in between there, enjoying some running and hopefully running in different countries and in different places. We have a fantastic conference coming up, as you know, so hopefully can do that there as well in November. And yeah, looking forward to it, to the rest of the year, I mean, so.
Yeah, I think you would actually enjoy running in Bilbao, even from last year at the Digital Water Summit. It was, even though it was a bit rainy, Bilbao is a very beautiful city. It's small, but I think you would absolutely enjoy it. You see a lot in that very tiny city. So, Sheila, thank you so much for this insightful discussion. I knew that you were an interesting individual, but I think that I now have an even deeper appreciation for all that you are endeavoring on a day-to-day basis. It was absolutely a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. And thank you to all of our listeners as well. Thank you for coming back again for our fourth episode. And as usual, you can stay tuned for another episode with another steering committee member. You can connect and engage with the Digital Water Program on IW Connect Plus and through our quarterly newsletter. All the links of the website for H2I and Sheila's LinkedIn will be in the bio of this, as well as the Connect Plus link and our newsletter link. Thank you so much, Sheila.
Thank you. Thank you, Erin. And hopefully we connect face to face later this year in Spain.
I hope so too. Bye.
Bye.